Five hosts, four divisions, all battling it out for the Holy Grail of the American Hockey League, the Calder Cup. This is the Holy Grail Podcast. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Paul, Zach Power, Andrew Rinaldi, Corey Swartz, and Dina Weinheimer.
Well, hello, hockey fans, and welcome to episode 51 of Field Pass Hockey's American Hockey League podcast, The Holy Grail. This is the episode for January 26th, and we're here to give you a recap of the last week in AHL hockey. But first, a quick housekeeping note. As you guys may or may not have noticed, Jeremy has been absent for the last couple of shows. Now, he's just taking some time off to handle a few personal things, but while he's having that time off, we are actually evolving into a two Zach show. Not one wasn't chaotic enough. We had to bring on another one. So, yeah, that's right. You met him back in our Atlantic Division showcase. Now he's coming on to help us out on the pod. So let's welcome back Zach Martin to the Holy Grail. Now, Zach, how about you give the listeners just a quick little recap of who you are and kind of how you found your way here to Field Pass Hockey?
Yeah, of course. Yes, I am the Charlotte Checkers beat writer for Field Pass Hockey. You can find me at FPH Checkers on Twitter to catch up on all the stuff that's going on over there. Found my way over here to Field Pass. I mean, I've been talking to Andrew Rinaldi for a long time now. Had him on another podcast I've been on a couple times now, actually. He's a two-time guest. But, yeah, talked to him for a good while. Been following Field Pass for a long time now, for the last couple years or so. On social, getting more into the social media game of, keeping up with hockey. And I felt, be a great way to, get bolster my writing a little bit and talk hockey. So it just kind of just worked out, reached out, and here I am, and I'm just super excited to be part of the family. So, yeah.
We're happy to have you here.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, I was super excited on Monday. All of a sudden I get this little message on Discord. Hey, do you guys need a little help, filling that fifth spot? And it was a no-brainer. Like, yes, come on the show. Let's run with this. So, all right. That said, we're going to go ahead and get on to our introductory question for this episode. Now, of course, the American Hockey League All-Star Classic is coming up here at the beginning of February in Laval, Quebec. And yeah, you want to stay tuned for coverage for that, by the way. Little plug, Andrew Rinaldi, our photography editor, Andrew Fielder, and I are all headed up to Laval to provide you a wall-to-wall coverage of the weekend. But anyway, so I have a question kind of inspired by the event. So, guys, you have been given the power to create a new skills competition for the AHL. Tell us, what is it?
Oh, geez. I would like to see, different sports played on ice skates. Like, give me a couple basketball nets and let's see how the boys do with a basketball and see if they can shoot it into a hoop, but on ice skates. Or let's see soccer being played and see if the goaltending position is easier or harder with just those giant nets on the ice. I would be very interested in seeing that.
Yeah, and so I'm Corey Swartz, just to refamiliarize you guys with my voice. Mine's a little bit more basic, I guess, than that, but I'd kind of like to see a twist on the fastest skater competition that kind of focuses a little bit more on edge work. Something maybe going, around forwards and backwards, around face-off circles. I know when I started playing hockey, that was one of the drills they made us do when I started skating or, playing, and that was one of the ones where you had to learn to, skate backwards and forwards and flip between them, or else you weren't going to make it playing hockey type of thing. It was an important skill to learn, and some of it's taken from, I saw a Hershey Bears practice where they were working exclusively on skating, and they had these guys, without their sticks, kind of trying to, hop around on one foot and, learn to curve inside and out with that, just that one edge. And so there's an incredible skill set these guys have, and I'd like to see a little bit more of it kind of in that regard. Like, fastest skater's fun, but I'd like to see a little bit more twist that shows off their edge work, too.
And I'm Dina Weinheimer. Now, we know these players are super skilled on the ice, but I want to know how skilled are they at picking out cute pets? So I want them to bring one of their pets to the All-Star game. Let's do a little pet parade and let the fans vote on which dog, cat, rabbit, bird, whatever is the cutest. Not exactly a skill per se, but it adds a little bit of a human aspect, and who doesn't like looking at cute fuzzy animals?
For me, I would say going on with Andrew, like, was doing, like, talking about different sports and stuff, I would like to see, you know, do like a little bit of a, like, not accuracy in terms of shooting, but like I want to see if, like, do like on ice miniature golf but with like hockey pucks and have like windmills on the ice and like have like different like ways of setting up the, like, the golf course. I would say it'd be kind of fun to see how guys would be able to, like, you know, finesse pucks into like different areas and like different obstacles and like try to shoot it over mascots or whatever. A little bit of mini golf mixed with hockey, because, you know, why not have a little bit more chaos? Because why not? It's the American Hockey League. We thrive on chaos.
Hey, I'm all par for it. For me, I got to look back at the NHL 2K series, and, you know, they had this Zamboni feature where you had about 2 minutes to clean the ice. This is what I want to see. I want to give them 2 minutes. I want to put a bit of nitrous on that Zamboni, and I want to see how fast can the players clean the whole rink, and whoever has the least amount of ice left at the end wins the skills competition.
They need to take out an extra insurance policy on that just for the All-Star game.
Like, just the small burst alone, just to get the NOS going, and just be a little, like, because you're only talking 200 feet. How fast are they going to go?
I can already see the images trending of just those Zambonis with the hydraulic fluid leaking out and the Zamboni on fire. Like, I,
oh my gosh.
We're gonna have to get, like they have in the bowling alley, the little bumpers. They're gonna have to line all the boards with that.
They're gonna have. I hope they got some backup Zambonis there.
As long as they move all the fans up five rows or something like that, they should be pretty well fine insurance wise.
Only five.
All right. You might want to bring like five or six extra Zambonis to the rink then, just in case, and how many dings and destroyed ones we're gonna have.
And then Corey hitting us with a gem in our private chat here on StreamYard. 1/10 of the ice is left uncleaned, and you'll never find out where it is.
Well, that's how it always went in the 2K series. I remember I tried to do that seriously. Like, I'd watch how they do it in games, and I tried to do it that way. And there was always 0.1% of the ice is unclean, you know, not counting as clean, and I never found it. Also, I will argue that mini game is much more fun when you're playing on the Wii and you have a Wii remote as your steering wheel.
All right, so lesson to the American Hockey League: never let Zach Power in charge of planning off the wall events. Or if you want,
or always let Zach.
I mean,
that is how we grow the game. Put Zach Power in charge. All right.
I mean, he already has enough power as it is. I don't think we need to give him any more than he's got. So, I mean,
true.
They'll be challenged to use lighters for something or other as one of the events, I'm sure.
A candle lighting competition.
But the match is on the end of the stick. You have to, like, just gently try to light candles with the end of your stick.
No sticks. No sticks. You got the fingers right there.
Wow. Okay.
He wasn't here for all that. I got to pull those clips later and show them because, wow, it's...
Okay. I'm trying to catch up. I'm about a few episodes behind. I'm slowly trying to catch up to the catalog that is the Holy Grail. So I'm working on it.
This is a series of Zach Power. You know, a few episodes in, he does it for the first time, and then a few episodes into season two, does the same thing again. Yeah, it's a whole thing. But anyway, we're going a little long just on the intro. We got to get the show on the road. So let's go ahead and take a look at our elite prospect of the week. Once again, many thanks to our exclusive partner, Elite Prospects, the world's leading hockey resource for league, team, and other player data. Be sure to check them out over at eliteprospects.com. So here at the Holy Grail, each week we award the AHL Elite Prospect of the Week. Now, whether it's because of their on-ice play, some type of achievement, or something else that made them stand out, this is our top player for the last week in AHL hockey. And this week, as nominated by Corey Swartz, the honor goes to Hershey Bears forward Ethan Frank. As of the time of recording, Ethan is 1 point back of the league lead for rookie points, currently on a 6-game point streak with 5 goals and 4 assists for 9 points. So yeah, he put up 2 goals in the last game. First goal, getting the scoring started for his team after going down 2-0 to the Belleville Senators, and then finishing off the night with an empty netter. Again, moving him into a tying position for the league amongst rookies with 18 goals this season. And then for the in terms of points, you know, he's 1 point back behind Iowa's Sammy Walker for that rookie points crown. So again, with this performance, he's on a 6-game point streak where he's put up 5 goals, 4 assists, and is a +1 in that span. Now, this is technically kind of his second season, but he's still a rookie. We all know those crazy AHL rules for rookies that really messed us all up last season, but I digress. So this season, this is great for a rookie, 31 points, +17. With 12 penalty minutes, 6 power play goals, 3 game winners across 32 games. And oh yeah, he's also poised to make his first AHL All-Star Classic appearance in Laval. So congratulations to Ethan Frank. And of course, as always, all data is courtesy of Elite Prospects. All right, we're going to go ahead and jump right on into our weekly news recap. And Corey is going to get us started.
Yeah, we have a milestone alert to start us off here. As Lehigh Valley Phantoms captain Cal O'Reilly became the AHL's 25th player to reach 700 points. He got that point in the second period of Friday's game, a 5-2 win over the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins. Desperately needed points for him, desperately needed points on the board for the Phantoms to get them 3 straight wins.
Yeah, we also had another milestone on Friday as well. Alex Bear Boulay has surpassed the franchise record for points in Syracuse. He got a notch on Friday as well, scoring his 242nd point with the Crunch. So, I mean, congratulations to him. You know, it's always a good honor to get, you know, the most points on a franchise that you've been with a long time. So 242, huge stick taps to him for sure.
And speaking of records, unfortunate milestone alert. Why did I volunteer to read this one? I'm a glutton for punishment. But the Cleveland Monsters broke a franchise record. Usually this is good, this one not so much, for most goals allowed in their Saturday blowout as they gave up 9 goals against the Checkers in a 9-0 final. Zach with an H. I know we discussed a little bit of this pre-recording, but what a weekend series between, and I don't know if any of you guys picked this last week, but that was the series to watch for better or for worse.
I did.
There's no way you picked that series.
Oh wait. I said it was the game of the week. That count?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Wow.
I'm going to hold him. I
plugged your article. I plugged the site. We were playing Cash Money Sounds all night long, baby.
Let's see. I'm going to pull up the script from last week because I'm curious. Did you really?
I did.
That would be wild if you somehow picked that series.
Why am I not seeing it on here? It's not on the script.
Didn't I?
It's not on the script.
Corey, Andrew, did I? Because apparently I won the bonus round. No one told me that.
Well,
it's a very fictitious episode.
Put an asterisk next to it. Maybe he did. We don't know for sure.
And we'll see if Zach did or not. If he did, it was an off-script pick, which is even more impressive in my mind.
But yeah, Deanna, like this weekend was an absolute gong show for both of our teams. Like, of course, like you have to cover when your team loses 9-0. I'm there in attendance the next day for country music night and see a 96 penalty minute game where the Checkers lost 5-2. So, I mean, I guess the hockey gods were like, you know what? It's okay, Deanna. You had to watch your team lose 9-0. How about we just have a little, you know, extra almost 100 minutes of penalty minutes just because with me there in attendance.
But I will say, though, if you are a fan of good calls and you have access to the Charlotte or Cleveland feeds on AHL TV, go back and listen to Tony Brown's call. That's Cleveland's play-by-play guy for that third goal on Sunday. That was the most cathartic exhale. Oh my gosh, we're actually doing the thing right now. Relief call I've ever heard. It was great. I love it. Goosebumps, all that. But yeah, that it was a weekend, and we won't go on too more about it. If you want to know my real thoughts about it, go over to fieldpasshockey.com, pull up my latest column, the Monday Monster Mash, and yeah, you'll get a lot more of my unfiltered feelings about that weekend.
All right. Well, let's move on. In other news in the AHL this week, the Calgary Wranglers defenseman Dennis Gilbert has been suspended for 2 games following an illegal hit to the head that occurred on Friday's game against Abbotsford. Gilbert missed Tuesday's game and Wednesday's as well against Ontario.
Yeah, and also suspended from an incident that same night was Abbotsford Canucks defenseman Alex Cannon-Leipert, who was suspended for 1 game, receiving an instigator penalty in the final 5 minutes of the game against Calgary. He sat out for Tuesday's game against the Toronto Marlies. And Zach, if I recall this one correctly, it was the free game of the week last week, was one of the games in that series, and we were saying about how it had the potential to have some trouble brewing in it. Just from, I believe they played a series of 3 games against each other this past week. So it appears that the contempt was there as we anticipated.
It's second, third round playoff hockey last weekend.
I mean, what better in the middle part of January to have playoff style hockey? I mean, that's great. But we do have one more suspension to quickly go over here. And that's San Diego's Hunter Drew, who was suspended following a spearing call this past Friday night. Now, he is already back in action, having served his suspension against Sunday's contest against Coachella Valley. Now to welcome this week's special guest.
All right. And this week, we're honored to be joined by the voice of the Texas Stars. Our guest graduated from Arizona State's Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication. So if you need some Coyotes tickets, he's your guy. Before joining the team in Texas, he was part of the marketing team that won ECHL Marketing Department of the Year with the Kalamazoo Wings. And prior to his time in Kalamazoo, he won ECHL PR and Broadcaster of the Year in 2019 with the Tulsa Oilers. He's been real busy this season, calling 145 of his team's goals, good for first in the AHL. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to welcome the Texas's broadcasting and media relations manager, John Peterson. John, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And John, just to get things kicked off here, we're going to focus a little bit on you personally. Now, I got my start in radio news, so when it comes to broadcasters, I kind of have a soft spot with them, but I'm intrigued. So what led you to become a broadcaster, but more specifically, a hockey play-by-play broadcaster?
Yeah, you know, it all kind of developed when I was in school at ASU. The Walter Cronkite School of Journalism was obviously a great experience. They're a prestigious program that's probably one of the top journalism schools in the country. And, you know, you kind of have the ability early on to decide if you want to go into print, broadcast, PR, and focus on one of the three. And getting a little bit of experience at the campus radio station, doing some sports updates and shows and a few games play by play. I kind of decided pretty early on in college that I wanted to go into broadcasting sports. Hockey didn't really come about until my senior year. I was named sports director of that campus radio station, and I decided I wanted to incorporate some hockey games into the play by play platform that we had already kind of featuring ASU football and Sun Devil basketball and baseball. So hockey was still a club program at the time. It wasn't a Division I team yet, which dates me a little bit, but decided I wanted to start there, and I didn't know if I'd be any good at it or even like it. I was actually terrified my first hockey game. And some of my peers said, you got to stick to this. This is your best at hockey compared to some of the other sports that I've done play-by-play of. And that was pretty high praise from some of my peers that I trusted. And being a Minnesota native, I obviously had hockey in my blood since I was a kid. And so when I graduated, I wanted to explore the path and knew it would be kind of a grind and see where it would take me. And, you know, 3 years doing high school sports up on the Canadian border, northern Minnesota, 2 years in the North American Hockey League doing juniors, junior hockey. And then my first pro shot was in Evansville when they were still in the ECHL before they went to Jacksonville. Then I went to Tulsa for 3 years and Kalamazoo for a couple. And next thing you know, I'm here in Texas. So following a kind of the road less traveled, if you will, a very different path from what a lot of people have gone through, but I wouldn't change a thing. I've grown a lot personally and professionally following this dream, and I haven't wavered. And now, you know, I'm in a really great place here in Texas.
Being a part of being a broadcaster, there's so many different things that you have to do before you kind of get on air. And then once you get on air, right down to the prep beforehand and then going on air pre and post, is there any sort of the job that you just really enjoy?
Yeah, you know, that's I think you live for the games. You know, that's when your adrenaline is going. It's natural. You know, you're watching the game as really a fan of the sport. You know, you work for the team, so you build, you know, biases towards the team that you work for, obviously. And you get to know these players and coaches throughout the course of the year too, so you want to see them succeed. And you know, there's a lot of things that go into it people don't realize behind the scenes, different hats that you wear. Different things that you manage. And I think at the end of the day, you do it because you love to do it. You don't do it for any other reason than you love to be a part of it. You love to put on the headset at, you know, at 7 o'clock or whenever the game starts and kind of be a part of the fan experience, you know. And there are a lot of fans that come up to me at different events that say they just love listening, and, you know, little things like that means the world to hear. You know, I'm a critic of my work. I'm my own biggest critic. So I'll go back and listen to things that I want to do better the next time or things I want to correct and continue to work on. Never be satisfied by where I'm at or what I've accomplished. So to hear feedback from complete strangers is always cool.
So for fans that are, you know, want to get a little bit deeper into the Stars and some of these other topics, at Field Pass, we'll be publishing a feature about the Texas Stars on Friday, featuring thoughts from head coach Neil Graham and captain Curtis McKenzie. Curtis has been with the team for a total of 7 seasons with some stopovers in Chicago and Utica, dividing up his time in the American Hockey League. Can you talk about the impact both of these guys have had on this team this season?
Yeah, I mean, the leadership of this group is exceptional. And when you really see the preparation that the coaching staff does each and every day to make sure the team is ready for every opponent that they're playing, it's stuff that most people don't realize. The amount of hours that go into breaking down the opposing team's previous games and what their tendencies are and what their power play looks like and what their penalty kill looks like, and then breaking down our games on what we need to do better, what worked for us, systems that we have in place, tendencies individual players have on specific line combinations, just the work that goes into it. And our coaching and every coaching staff, to their credit, does those things that people don't see. But working closely with our team and Neil Graham, Max Fortunas, Travis Morin, they work very, very hard at it, and it shows in their leadership into that locker room. Then you have a guy like Curtis McKenzie, to your point. He's been here for 7 years, off and on. There was a little stop in Chicago and Utica in there. He's been playing pro hockey for 10 years now, and he's such a great person on top of his leadership on the ice too. He's a guy that's really easy to root for, easy to get along with. He's got his family here in Texas. He really considers Texas home. He made the choice to come back here and sign a 2-year AHL contract two summers ago. And, you know, on top of his leadership, the team that we have in place with some of our veteran players, Alex Petrovic, a guy who's played 300-plus NHL games and, you know, a lot of AHL games as well, just a stand-up person across the board. Tanner Caro is another guy who's been around the block at this level and the NHL level. That's just a class act. And then O'Reilly Barber, who's a great person on top of how fun he is to watch as a player. I mean, that guy shoots the puck like nobody I've seen. You know, there's a reason he's among the league leaders in scoring, but he's a great teammate too. You know, the guys all like him in that room. So to have veterans that you can trust on the ice to produce, but also to lead some of the younger players through the grind of a long season, it's going to take you a long way.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, Riley Barber, next week, he's going to be up there in Laval for the All-Star Classic, along with Coach Graham and defenseman Thomas Harley. Riley's in his first year with the team. Harley's in his third. What are your thoughts on these three representatives? And do you feel like there are any snubs? Like, could Texas possibly have had more going to Laval, do you think?
Yeah. You know, it's easy for me to say I'm a little bit biased. I feel like this team is so deep that the numbers don't jump off the page at you when you look at the stats, because Riley Barber is the only one in the 30s for points. He's the only one close to that point per game pace. But this team is truly four lines deep and truly three defensive pairings deep. And there's a lot of players in double digits. There's 11 different players that have 20 or more points. Riley's the only one with 30 or more. So if you're going off of just points, you know, it's hard to say, yeah, this guy deserves to be in the All-Star game or this guy deserves to be in the All-Star game. I think they got it right from a standpoint of, you know, Riley Barber definitely deserves to be there with the season that he's put together. And he's never been an All-Star before, which surprises me because he's had a really productive career everywhere he's been. But Thomas Harley is truly the top defensive prospect in Dallas's system, that, you know, first-round pick, played 34 games for Dallas last year, and he has – taken big strides this year. Stuff that the coaching staff will echo on both ends of the ice. He has really embraced the opportunity to shore up some things in his game. Sometimes players, you know, who have NHL experience, they get sent down. They feel like they don't belong. You know, they should be back up. And that's not the case with him. He's really had a good attitude about it. He's worked on his defensive game. He's worked on his game away from the puck. Everybody knows the talent Thomas Harley has with the puck on his stick and his skating abilities. And he's shown that with his production as well. And he's definitely deserving of being an All-Star. But then just the development that he has shown this year has been incredible. I don't think he'll wait much longer, whether it be this year or next year, to get back up there to Dallas. And he'll be truly a longtime NHL player. There are several players that I think are deserving of going to Laval, being biased, that I don't even want to name them because I feel like I'm going to leave somebody out. But that's a good problem to have when you're a team that's in first place that needs to have a deep team to try to make a serious run in the playoffs. It's not necessarily about one or two All-Stars. It's about the group. And there's a lot of reliable guys that you can put on fourth line, third line, penalty kill that do the job.
Now, as a broadcaster, do you get to go up with these guys, or are you staying in the warmth of Texas here?
No, you know what? I actually enjoy Laval. I've been there one time. It was last season, and I wish I wasn't. So I was so sick that week that we were in Laval. I didn't really get a chance to explore as much as I would have liked. I'm jealous. I wish I could be there to at least travel alongside and be there for moral support for our guys. You know, pick up an interview or two along the way, but I will be enjoying the warmth of Texas as opposed to going up there to Laval.
Well, we'll let you know how the beaver tails and the poutine are when we're out next week.
Yeah, if you guys don't mind sending me some poutine via FedEx, I'll take some down here, whatever it takes.
Andrew and I are heading up. We'll try our best to figure it out. So for anybody listening that is going up to Laval, I know you said you were sick, but is there any one thing that we need to check out while people are up there in the area?
You know, it's hard to say. I can't even remember the places that we only went to a couple of spots before I ordered DoorDash the rest of the trip because I honestly didn't leave the hotel room other than to
fit
in the games. I will say that Place Bell is such a beautiful arena. Just a state-of-the-art AHL facility that it's like a mini Bell Center, which I'm sure was intended when they built it, and they obviously wanted the Canadiens affiliate to play out of there. But you walk into to Place Bell and you feel like you're in a mini Bell Center. It's really cool.
Now, you kind of already started talking about the penalty kill here, so we're going to focus on that. We're going to talk about some of the play this season. You know, that penalty kill, first in the AHL, well, whenever I looked at this, I doubt this has changed, but they were first in the AHL, clicking out away at 87.5%, seven shorthanded goals for. Can you give us just a little bit more insight into the penalty killing units for the Stars, and why are they so successful this season?
Yeah, the buy-in has been incredible. And this goes to the leadership from the top down, and the depth is the coaching staff feels comfortable with six or seven forward pairings for the penalty kill, and five or six, sometimes all six defensemen killing penalties. And, you know, I've been a part of a lot of teams before where usually you've got your four penalty killing defensemen and you've got maybe three shifts of forwards that you rotate. This team has six or seven forward groups that are willing to go out there and kill penalties and do it at a high level. And that speaks to the group. It really does. And then on top of that, I have to give credit where credit is due. And this goes back to the preparation of the coaching staff, is they are working tirelessly, tweaking things, seeing what the tendencies are for opposing teams' power plays. Each and every opponent has a different power play look. You know, how are we going to match up? And so Max Fortunas, former Stars player, really handles a lot of the penalty killing duties. Being a former defenseman, he helps out greatly in that regard. And that's a penalty kill that during their 8-game winning streak in December, 12-game point streak that carried into January, at one point it killed off 39 straight penalties, and it was like 55 out of 56 or something, like some crazy number. It truly felt like we were more dangerous shorthanded getting opportunities than the other team was with the power play. And it's not being cocky. It was just from my vantage point up in the press box, the shorthanded opportunities were two or three every kill, which of course then leads to those seven shorthanded goals. A flurry of them were during that winning streak where we're just dangerous. And you know, we've come back down to earth a little bit, but for a while there, the penalty kill was about 89%. And was 3 or 4 percentage points clear of second place in the league. That's how good it was. And, you know, that's going to be hard to maintain. I think 87.5 is going to be hard to maintain, but they've been rolling.
Then, John, you joined Texas November of last year. And last season, this team kind of showed a lot of glimpses of promise, but kind of struggled to kind of put it all together. Ended up in one of the last playoff spots in the Central and then got outed by Rockford at the end there. What do you think really kind of sets this squad's play apart from last season to this year? And, you know, where have you noticed any areas for improvement in this year's squad?
Well, I will say that last year, the team got off to kind of a slower start, really was struggling the first half of last season, and really had their issues keeping the puck out of the net. And then something clicked about mid-January. It was actually when we were in Charlotte for those two games against the Checkers, where there was one game that was like 8-5. There were some high-scoring games, but then something clicked. And Texas went on a run, and we were really good the second half of the season. Not this good that we've seen this year so far, but the momentum, I think, the team fought their way in. last year. That, you know, they had to win 7 out of 8 in the month of April on the road. Had to win 4 straight on the road in the final week to get into the playoffs. I mean, they were arguably the hottest team going into the playoffs, even though they were one of the last teams to get in. And then just ran into a hot goalie in those 2 games in Rockford, and it was, you know, small margin for error in a best-of-3 series. Scored 1 goal in those 2 games. Arvid Soderblom stood on his head, and that was that. I think a lot of those players that returned from last year's team showed so much growth towards the end of last season that that appeared pretty early on this year. And then some of the new acquisitions like O'Reilly Barber brought into the fold. A Will Butcher has been outstanding, brought into the fold this year. Those have complemented the players that showed so much growth last season towards the end of the year. And it's all come together. And the depth has been incredible. Marian Studenich is another name that's been excellent for us this year. And then Matei Blumel is arguably the steal of the summer with what he's done. He's a rookie who's almost at a point per game pace. He was a 4th-round pick of Edmonton in 2019, unsigned, free agent going into the summer, and Dallas signed him to an entry-level deal, basically a steal. And when I saw some tape of him this summer, I had a feeling that he could be the missing piece or one of them going into this season, and he's been awesome.
Is there any funny or interesting stories from the season that you could possibly share with us and obviously the fans of the podcast?
Oh boy, funny or interesting? I don't know about funny so much as just crazy things that you couldn't script. That, you know, you always feel like you've seen it all. You know, you've been around hockey enough, been around long enough, watched enough hockey, you think you've seen it all. And that game that we played against Manitoba in November, it was at home. It was November 18th. The Moose went up by a pair of goals in the third period. It was tied going into the third. They went up 4-2. And with 2.5 minutes left, Stars got a power play and pulled the goalie. And Will Butcher scored with the extra attacker on. So it's 4-3. The very same power play, pulled the goalie again. Manitoba gets an empty netter. So it should be over. It's 5-3 now. And with a minute left or a minute and a half left, Stars call a timeout. It's 5-on-5 again. And they pull the goalie again. Maverick Bork scores with a minute left to make it 5-4. So it's the second goal with the extra attacker on. Pull the goalie a third time, and Will Butcher scores with 10 seconds left to force overtime. So now that's 3 goals with the extra attacker to make it 5-5. We go to overtime. Stars get a power play in overtime, and Jacob Peterson scores the overtime winner. So it was a 6-5 comeback. And I'm telling you, and it was a home game. It was a great crowd. We've had really good crowds all year long. But you know, it's just electric. I get the chills kind of thinking back to it because I've never seen anything like it, and I've been around hockey my whole life. So it's not really a funny story, I guess, but it's one I won't forget.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a couple of those last-second comebacks over in Grand Rapids earlier this season, and there hasn't been a lot of positivity surrounding that team this year, but, you know, you take them where you get, and it's You're right. There's really nothing better in the sport when you get – a tying goal with 9 seconds left, and you just hear that crowd really come to life. But we're about halfway through the season here now, John. Let's put your t-shirt hat on. What grade would you give this team and why?
Oh boy. I would say probably an A-. And the reason being is the first couple weeks of the season, the first month of the season, it took a while to really kind of get some consistency. The Stars wouldn't lose back-to-back games really ever. I think they've only maybe had – they haven't lost regulation games consecutively all year. But there's been like once or twice they've lost a game and then lost one in overtime maybe back-to-back. But then when they got hot, we kind of saw the Stars at their best. Or close to their best. And I'm sure that if you ask the coaches, they'd tell you there was still room to improve when they'd won 8 in a row and picked up points in 12 straight. Right now they've won or they've picked up points in 16 out of 17 going back to December 1st. Just been a really impressive run. And I still think they haven't been at their best. They haven't pulled it all together during the run. They've had a lot of really good games. But there are some times, like the last 2 games in Manitoba, we fell behind by a pair of goals in both. The Sunday game, we were down 3-0 in the first 8 minutes, came back and forced overtime and got a point out of it, but couldn't pull it together in overtime. So I think an A minus is a fair grade if I were to put my teacher hat on. I think that this team will be a contender, but I will say that there are a lot of really good teams that we've seen. We see Colorado again this weekend. That team is very good, and they're third in the Pacific, which is how strong that division is. We see Coachella Valley four times next month. You know, I've heard only good things about them, so that should be a really good litmus test of where Texas is at. Manitoba is a solid bunch. Don't count them out. They're starting to turn things around again. Iowa's on a run. You know, we've kind of had our way with Iowa, but that team, if they get healthy and get going, there's no guarantees once you get to the playoffs. Rockford has had our number. Rockford's a tough, tough team. They're very deep, especially at forward, especially at defensemen too. They're deep in a lot of areas. Milwaukee's got a lot of talent. So I will say that I think Texas will be a contender. I wouldn't be surprised if they made a deep run in the Calder Cup playoffs, but I also know that you can't overlook anybody, and there's a lot of good teams in this league.
Yeah, and they'll definitely have the crowd behind them. I know the fans out there feel like it's almost a sellout every time. It's great attendance this year. I want to go to our final question, and we like to ask our guests this every time they come onto the podcast. You're a player in the AHL, and you can have your very own goal song. What would it be?
Oh, man. Oh, that's a good one. I got to think Pump Up, because there's so many songs that are really good songs. Oh, man, that's a really good one. You know, I'm a big Linkin Park guy. Mm-hmm. I listen to Linkin Park all the time, so pick your Pump Up song from Linkin Park, and I'll probably agree with it. Man, I don't know. I don't know which one I would choose. There's too many good ones.
We'll just get a playlist and just put it on shuffle for every time your fictional AHL player scores. So, I mean, that sounds good to me, honestly.
There you go.
All right. Well, John Peterson, broadcaster for the Texas Stars. If people would like to catch a Stars broadcast or maybe follow you somewhere, where can they do all of that?
Yeah, so obviously we're on AHL TV, which is the first place I recommend, so you can watch it. But, you know, we also have a free audio stream on our website on TexasStars.com, which is a good place to listen as well. Every game is on there, and it's under our game center. And then, of course, we're always posting highlights, and we've got the social content rolling out on our social media pages. So I got to give a shout out to our talented social team, because those guys do really good work. So hopefully there's a lot to discuss the rest of the year, and we can keep things going, because it's been a lot of fun to be a part of.
Well, John, thank you once again for your time and joining us here on the Holy Grail podcast.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So trying to keep this tight again here, we're just going to move right on into my favorite segment. Swipe left and swipe right. Y'all know the rules by now. All the guys here, they're going to share their hot takes from across the league. And we're just going to give a real quick, yeah, I'm going to swipe left, swipe right, or if we really like it. And Zach Martin, you know, you get to use this too. If you really like it, one super swipe up per month. So again, alphabetical order. Andrew, kick us off.
For sure, and I'm coming out hot with this one. This might be my hottest take of the season so far. I mean, it has to do with the Firebirds and Coachella. They're on fire. Coachella's too strong. Coachella's unstoppable. We've heard it all. Coachella will not come out of the playoffs or out of the Pacific bracket this playoffs. I almost worry that they're peaking too early, and there's so many good teams in that division that it's going to be a grind for any of them. And it's hard to trust teams that play their best hockey in January to also come out with that same fire in the postseason. It's a tough call to make right now, knowing my Justice for Potts campaign depends on Coachella really performing. But I've all all season long, I've had a soft spot in my heart for the Calgary Wranglers. And I mean, I've just been looking at the stats between these two teams. And yes, Coachella's got those gaudy offensive numbers that have really been carrying them. But Calgary's matched up with them. And I think when it comes down in the playoffs to stopping the other team, I think that's where the Wranglers just have that slight edge that might just put them over it.
I'm going to simply say, how dare you abandon Andrew Podorolski? Swipe left. Justice for thoughts. Swipe left.
I mean, I could get on board with this one, honestly, with a swipe right, because, I look at and specific, you know, I don't have a prediction for how it would end just yet, to be honest with you. But we saw how it happened last season with the Hartford Wolfpack. They were atop the league, or at least the Atlantic Division. I don't know about the league. I can't remember that well. But at this time, a year ago, and it's kind of just been a continuous tumble forward down the standings for them ever since that season. And, you know, not so much of late, but, you know, it's totally possible that a team that gets hot and stays hot, and hey, you know, I can even say that about the Bears last season, is that they burned hot and then they burned out. And, you know, some of the factors are out of their control, but there's a long way towards it. My worry for Coachella Valley is if it's sustainable at this point. You know, they play a lot of teams where it's kind of some easy money in a sense. I've seen a couple, you know, they get a lot of the bottom feeders in the Pacific Division, a good amount there. And, you know, I just kind of wonder if that makes it a little easy for them, type of thing, when they start to play some, you know, higher quality competition. They have a lot of great guys in their roster, of course. So I'm not saying that as a slight against them at all, but I could get on board with this for sure.
Yeah, I guess I'll swipe right on this for the Calgary Wranglers. I mean, because the fact that you're talking about a 49 goal differential for these guys right now, I mean, they're playing really solid hockey, only 3 points back. I can see Calgary just chugging along the usual. They're not the most penalized team either in the division. So, I mean, I have a good feeling that I can get on board with the Wranglers kind of taking this division, because it's just – there's no putting the heat out on those guys right now.
I'm pretty on the fence about this, but I will say this, and I'll talk about it more when we get to the Pacific Division in the race for the Holy Grail. But there's a cliff in the Pacific Division, and Coachella Valley's on that cliff with Colorado, Abbotsford, and Calgary. And we've seen how good Colorado is. I got trust in Abbotsford, and I also got trust in Colorado. So I'm all with you, Andrew.
I was trying to figure out which one I wanted to do for my, you know, for this segment, because it's first one. So I was trying to think of a good one to have for the North Division. I think I'm coming in pretty spicy with this take. I think Laval's going to finish top three in their division. Which is, I know, looking at the North, it's like they are at 38 points, but they're only 4 points back of Syracuse. I know Syracuse has more games in hand than Laval, but I mean, Laval's been on fire most recently. I think last time I checked, I think they were like 3-0, 1-0 or something like that. And their last 10, they've been really good as well. So I could definitely see Laval maybe, you know, catching some teams napping, especially Rochester and Syracuse, to give themselves a chance to go for a top three spot in the North and surprise everybody, especially where they were not even a few weeks ago, like in the bottom part of the division.
Swipe left. I think the Rocket are on a high, and I think that's the simple way to put it. They got off pretty lucky against Hershey, if we're going to be honest. They scraped by almost winning to Toronto, yes, but this is a team that has about 10 to 12 players missing from their opening lineup compared to today. And it looks like a lot of those players in Montreal aren't coming back anytime soon. And so I personally think that this is a bit of a high right now, and they're going to come down. They're going to make the playoffs, yes. They might move up a spot, yes, but I just can't see them getting into top three position.
I'm with Zach on this one. Unless Caden Primo becomes what he was last year, I don't see them. I mean, Syracuse, they're pretty solid up there. I like their odds of taking home that number three spot.
Let's just put it this way. Goaltending stinks in the North Division. I'm sorry, but it does. If you need some proof, go back to the AHL.com, look at the standings, and look at the goals against these North Division teams. It's atrocious. This is wide open, but I'm going to agree with what Zach said about just too many players being gone, and a lot of them, I don't think they're going to be really getting back in enough time for them to make that kind of run, whereas other teams have the personnel. It's a very hesitant swipe left for me, bordering on just closing out of the app and hoping you show back up in about a month and a half.
I'm going to give this one a right swipe this time. After watching them against Hershey, I was surprised at how well they matched up. Now, I do agree with Zach's take that they got a little lucky, right? They got five straight power plays, including one in overtime. That was the game. I think it should have gone a different way, to be honest with you. And I'm still not, you know, completely over that, truthfully. But Laval's a team where they have some weapons still, you know? I mean, I saw Anthony Richard was, you know, got a couple of good assists. They had a couple, even a hat trick there. I mean, you know, it was one of those things where it surprised me that they still kind of had that edge. And, you know, maybe it's not deep enough, but in the North Division, I think it's wide open enough that someone could go, you know, ice cold to, you know, afford them the chance. I mean, they're only 4 points out of being in that spot right now. You know, that's a difference of a couple of games. And, you know, will it last is probably the question I have. But, you know, I think that they're maybe a little bit more dangerous in this particular division than they might be in, you know, if they were, like, say, in the Atlantic or something like that, which is an absolute car pileup.
Yeah, if they were in the Atlantic, there's no way, especially when you got, like, third through eighth, 3 points between each other. Yeah, no, but like I said, it's very spicy coming in hot for my first one, but, you know, why not shake it up a little bit?
We love a spicy hot take at the Holy Grail Podcast.
Yeah, so mine's a light one for you guys, because I know this is kind of like, you know, judging which car looks the best in a five-man pileup type of thing, right? But that's how the Atlantic Division is basically right now. But my pick, my hot take for right now is I think that Wilkes-Barre Scranton is going to be the team that pulls away and maybe claims that third place spot and gets a grip on it. Now, it doesn't look so great right now for the Penguins. I will grant you that, because they're missing just an absolute boatload of players, and they're still managing, which impresses me a lot with them. You know, obviously they gave Hershey a good run for their money a couple of weeks ago, and that's what kind of comes to mind first. But they're missing, like, a lot of players. They're up in Pittsburgh, or they're out injured. Obviously, you know, we all know about Philip Hollander is injured. But they got players like Drew O'Connor, Ty Smith. They just got Dustin Tokarski back. You know, this is a team that's just missing a ton of players in my book that, you know, you get them all back, I'm scared of them, to be honest with you, a little bit. Is they, you know, they always seem to match up well. Maybe it always hasn't always recently, but that's kind of my hot take, is that I think that they're going to be the ones to kind of pull out of this pileup.
I'm just going to give you a quick, I guess, hesitant swipe right, because I think this is more plausible than Laval. So I'm not going to go emphatically, but I'll just kind of play the same card that I played with Zach's, but just going the other direction.
Yeah, I kind of going looking back at the goalies like I did with Laval. I mean, Dustin Tokarski's been pretty consistent for the Pens when he's been in there, and while he's coming back, I like their odds as well as any other team there. So whereas I went left with Laval, I'm going right for Wilkes-Barre.
Yeah, I would. It pains me to say this because of the fact that, like, I cover one of the teams that's the team that's technically in third place right now. It's a hesitant swipe left, just because I can't bring myself to be like, no, it's fine. Like, Wilkes-Barre is going to get top three. It's just they played the checkers so well, like, especially last week when I saw them in person. Alex Nylander, Pastainen, like, those guys, if those two consistently keep playing the way they do, even, like, Sam Hood, if those, like, that three-headed monster of those guys keep playing the way they are, Wilkes-Barre could make a case for a top three. Will Sam Hood stick with Nylander, Pastainen? I'm not sure, but if those other two guys keep playing the way they have been, I could see Wilkes-Barre making a case for taking the third place and kind of running away with everyone else kind of behind. So it, I guess, all really depends on if that three-headed monster can stay consistent like they have been.
I kind of guessed I was going to get a left swipe from you, Zach. I'm just because of that fact that the checkers are in that spot, I was like, I'm already getting one swipe left on that one.
It's dead middle. It's close, but it's like I can't bring myself to do that. But if any other case, I would have given you a Ray for that one. But
I put a picture. It's like putting a picture of yourself holding a fish up in your profile, right? For some people, it's going to be an automatic swipe left, and that's exactly what this was.
I mean, I couldn't put it better myself.
I'll give one quick take on that before I move on to mine. I will swipe left on this because I think that Charlotte. But you know what? I look at the goal differential really quickly. I look at the goal differential 102 to 117, and that's got to be the breaking point. You know what? I'm going to reverse here, and I'm going to go back and use that thing that lets you go back. Yeah, you know what? I'm all with you, Corey, but I want the caveat that Charlotte's going to be right behind, or even Springfield, because those two I do like in the Atlantic Division. As long as we can get behind that, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, that's kind of the difference, right? It's the goaltending. Is that there's a lot, you know, where there's no goaltending in the North, as we said, there's almost everybody has a goaltender in the Atlantic. And so that's what's kind of the X factor here, right?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to know with the checkers if we get Alex Lyon back at some point, because right now it's Matt Guzza and JF Berube. They did have Spencer Knight for the back-to-back, but right now it's all depends if JF and Mac can do their thing with Alex kind of being in Florida right now, kind of taking the reins over for Bob and Spencer Knight. So well, I guess we'll see for Charlotte on that.
For sure. Each year we give out the ugliest jersey of the year, seemingly. Last year, I think it was Rochester that took the cake. And this year, I think San Diego takes the cake for the ugliest jersey of the year. It's bad.
Oof.
Okay, hear me out. This is getting a right swipe because it is for disco nights, okay? If you were thinking disco and you look at this jersey, that font, the colors, it screams disco for me. This is like so ugly that it's good. Like, I almost hate to right swipe it because it is so good at that theme. That like, it's like the ugly Christmas sweater that you love, but it's still ugly. I want to right swipe that. Yes, it wins the ugly sweater or the ugly jersey contest, but yet I low key want one.
I'm with Dina on this one. I feel like you can't have a good looking jersey on disco night, right? Like it has to be ugly, and I'm all about it. I think it's got like that perfect 70s feel to it. It almost looks like it's too big because it is like that loose disco style, and I'm all about it. The font, the colors, it's awful to look at, but it fits the theme. It's even got the mirror ball on the shoulder.
I didn't even see the mirror ball. That puts it all together for me. I love this.
Oh my goodness.
It's so ugly, it's beautiful.
I mean, I agree with that. I think it's I say the same thing. It reminds me a little bit about when the Bears do St. Patrick's Day jerseys, right? It's not my favorite. I wouldn't be spending a lot of money to bring one home with me after the game, but like it fits the role. Like it's a St. Patrick's Day jersey. Like it fits. And I feel the same thing with that. It fits the theme perfectly. I'd love to see it in person just to see it a little bit better. I mean, this is a pretty good picture here. It's not like, you know, one of the, just the concept renders or whatever. It's a pretty good picture of it there, but I'd love to see it on the ice in person myself too. But yeah, right swipe. It fits the theme perfectly.
I'm going to have to go with the consensus. I would swipe right on the fact that it's probably going to be the worst jersey, but it does fit the theme and it does scream disco. I mean, you can see John Travolta's character in the movie's blanking on me right now, but just him on the dance floor.
This Saturday like, Night Fever. And the game's on Saturday, even better.
Yeah, well, see, it fits perfectly. So I bet you they're going to have a lot of themes from that movie in that, and somewhere in their broadcast and stuff like that. But yeah, swipe right. It fits perfectly with the night, the font, the style of it. It's so gaudy, but it's kind of like you can't not look at it. So, yeah, swipe right.
So we are going from hot jerseys to picks for who specifically is hot and who is, well, not. This time we're going to go in order from east to west in the AHL with Corey kicking us off with the Atlantic Division picks.
Yes, I have a couple of unusual ones here compared to what we normally do here, but I have a gimme for my game of the week. So I had to plug in the two matchups between Hershey and Lehigh Valley as the battle for who's hot this week, because the Phantoms have won three games in a row and they have on the ups. They appear to be improving with talent. They got Bobby Brink, who's been electric, you know, a close runner up for probably, you know, the Elite Prospect Award we gave out earlier. But the only thing I would say has probably been a downer in this stretch is that they played some, you know, some teams that aren't quite as strong. They beat Cleveland twice. They beat, you know, a battered up Wilkes-Barre team on Saturday. You know, that's kind of the only downer I can think there. Hershey, they have a 6-game point streak, but looking beyond it a little bit there, they, you know, had two games they probably should have won and they almost didn't win in, you know, overtime loss to Laval. They probably should have been able to lock down and, you know, a near disaster in Belleville, they were able to avert with a strong third period. So it's two teams that are kind of hot, but kind of have some question marks. Two games in at the PPL Center, the Thunderdome. It's the battle for who's hot here, certainly. And for who's not, we were talking about it a little bit earlier, but I can't pick on one team as truly not, so I'm picking on all of them. The 3-8 spot. It's that 5-car pileup where you're just trying to figure out which one has the least amount of damage and might not need to get a tow truck to get back home to get fixed. It's one of those things. As soon as somebody gets hot or cold, I should say, like last week it was Springfield I was picking on. They got hot. They went out west and beat a couple of teams that you know, like Milwaukee that you probably wouldn't expect. They put out some of their greatest defensive efforts. Then you see teams like Bridgeport that just kind of, you know, they've been good, but not quite good enough. Three teams are tied at 41 points for the last playoff spot. And then third's only at 44. So, you know, one team wins, one team loses. Some head-to-heads coming up here. I know Lehigh Valley and Wilkes-Barre are, you know, fifth and sixth, and they play each other on Friday, I believe. And it's just one of those things where it's like, who's going to get out of this mess here? So I'm kind of picking on everybody here to sort this out here. But, you know, by virtue of the same token, that play-in round has never looked more interesting than the Atlantic Division so far. So it all, you know, I'm sure the person who came up with that playoff format in the AHL that got it approved there is probably loving it, because that's probably some of the most interesting and wide open 3-game hockey series we could ever see if the playoffs started today.
Yes. So for my hot, I have to go with the Toronto Marlies. I mean, 9-1 in their last 10, they're on a, they have 10-point lead in their division. I mean, right now it looks like it's all systems go, hitting on all cylinders. I mean, right now this team is just the royalty of the division, running away with the crown. Yes, I had to throw some puns in there because why not? We love it. I just think it's gonna be hard for any team to catch these guys right now, and especially with, you know, Logan Shaw, 11 points in his last 4 games heading into Tuesday. He did get a shootout winning goal against Laval. Like, just right now, beating all expectations even from last year. I think right now, I don't know anyone in this division is going to catch the Marlies. They're just, for whatever reason, they're just a team that really can't – I don't know if there's any kinks in the armor. Right now, they're just a problem for the North Division. And then for my not, I know this is going to be an interesting conversation, especially since one of our moderator is a Monsters reporter. The Monsters, I know they did win on Sunday 5-2, but they did get routed 9-0, which would be considered a mauling from the Checkers. It's just, I know they're not in the last place anymore, but I mean, they're still kind of in that cellar of the division. They're just a team that needs to find an identity because they've just really dropped over the last couple months. And for me, they can't rely on Fix Orlansky to fix this team. It's just they can't rely on him consistently to do all the work. So it's just one of those things where for me, it's like Syracuse and Laval are kind of like pulling away from them right now, and I just don't know if I can see them even fighting for a playoff spot. It's just, like I said, despite that, you know, coming season from the moment of responding in that game on Sunday, winning 5-2, I just don't think that 9-0 game against the Checkers really, I think, put the nail in the coffin of like a really bad season for a Monsters team that was relying on a couple guys to try to fix this problem for them.
If, first of all, okay, they were in last place. Now they are second to last in the North Division. So
can I did fix it. I did fix that.
Please fix them just a little tiny bit of slack, please. Okay, thanks. And also, let me just kind of frame this up for you. In the week ahead in Monsters Hockey, they have two games, both at home, both against Laval. Okay, Laval's only 3 points ahead of them. So if Cleveland, if the 9-0 was just a everything went wrong that could go wrong type of game, and, you know, because to be fair, Cleveland got a ton of players back in a very short little bit of span. So any chemistry or whatever that they had built up over the last few weeks basically got obliterated in like one or two games. Okay. But if Cleveland, if this is like capitalized, bold, italicized, underlined, if Cleveland manages to sweep that weekend series, Friday and Saturday against Laval, all of a sudden Cleveland's in a playoff spot. Maybe they're not so not, but I'm just advocating for my B team here.
As opposed to me, who's been throwing my beat teams in the knot all season long.
Fair.
Oof.
And as we go on over here to the Central, you know, who's really been hot has been Iowa's goaltender, Jesper Wallstedt. Friday's win over the Admirals marked Wallstedt's fifth straight win. And the 2021 first-round pick, he's been a huge piece of that wild surge, pun intended, that has put Iowa firmly into the playoff picture here in the Central Division and has kind of separated themselves from those basement creatures known as my beat teams. He's now 10-7-4 with a .912 save percentage here in his rookie season that, oh, by the way, includes a goal. Not bad for a guy who just turned 20 back in November. And, you know, this is going to be a familiar name here in the knot. It's the Rockford Ice Hogs. And I've been going in on Rockford recently. I know, and I kind of like, I gave them a bit of the benefit of the doubt with Lucas Reichel and Brett Cini up with the Blackhawks, but there are no excuses now. The top line has been reunited in the AHL, and they're still losing. And not just losing, but they're getting pumped by non-playoff teams in Grand Rapids, Springfield, and Chicago by the tune of 18 goals against to 6 goals for, all at home. Objects in the mirror are closer than they appear, Rockford, and the Iowa Wild are coming for your spot.
I wonder if it's because of the fact of the mascot redesign is what's given Rockford their bad mojo, because oof.
Anything I can to trash on that mascot, I will.
kind of brought on themselves, honestly.
Yeah, when I look at the Pacific Division, for me, I mean, I think it's about time that we start talking about Michael Carcone and putting up 10 points, points in 10 straight games, rather, 20 points through that time, too, so even better than I said. This guy has been under the radar for far too long because he's on that bad side of the cliff on the Pacific Division. His contract's up in August, and Arizona would be silly not to sign him. He's continuing his streak that to just keep this team in relevancy, and he's keeping him on his back. So that's my hot for this week. Might not, you know, we talk about this cliff. Well, you know why San Jose is not winning games? It's their penalty minutes. They average more penalty minutes per game than any other team in the league. They average 19 penalty minutes a game. A game, folks. And the lowest, by the way, Rochester, they're the good ones here at 972. So yeah, we're not doing this. And you know what? I read this stat yesterday. Jeffrey Beal on San Jose, 117 penalty minutes in 38 games. 117. That's just about a seventh of all the penalty minutes that are taken by him. So, yeah, there you go. Penalty killing, I knew you were going to ask. 15th, by the way, which, good, I guess. They have lots of time to practice. We are absolutely.
And just a friendly reminder, that's not the only reason why San Jose is not winning. That's just one of the many.
No.
That's still brutal, though. 19 minutes, and then he got 117, 30. Like, he must have really got some, like, penalty box snacks if he really wants to be in there that much. To be like, you know what? I want to play hockey. I got some Hot Pockets in the penalty box. I want to eat those real quick. Like, what are we doing here?
Well, I mean, Hot Pockets usually are ice cold, and it's no...
But only in the middle.
Only in the middle. So I guess Natural Home is in the freezer.
The outside, next to the first bite is that molten lava that burns the roof of your mouth. And then the roof.
True. And a real quick aside here. So the finish of the, or I guess the completion of that Utica Wilkes-Barre Scranton match that was kind of postponed due to that power failure and at the Adirondack Bank Center just finished up. And Corey, did you want to go back and revise any of your part of the show? Because ouch. 5-1 victory for Utica. What happened to Wilkes-Barre Scranton here?
I did say it was when they were healthy, was when they're going to start that surge up there, okay, when they get some guys back. But it appears that having Dustin Tokarski for the back half of that game just didn't help them any. They got, if you were ever curious if that 2 minutes and 47 seconds, I believe it was, if that mattered or not, it sure did, because, Utica scored their third goal with 2 seconds left in that second period. And, the Penguins may have wanted to take that 2-1 score and just say, forget it, we don't need to play the rest of the game at this point, because it looks worse as a 5-1 final. And, one of their games in hand, they just lose in terms of getting out of that car pile up in the Atlantic. So it's got to be a little bit frustrating for Wilkes-Barre. They started this remake game, for lack of a better word, the continuation, I guess, is the word they use, on a power play. So, you talk about, I didn't get to see how it actually went, but I assume that they, instead of dropping the puck at center ice, they got to just take it and say, well, okay, we're starting the game right here in the Utica zone, and you guys are just going to start in a power play. And that's got to be frustrating for some of those guys to kind of see that one go against them here. So, like I said, though, it's a completely different roster, more or less, for Wilkes-Barre compared to Utica. If you look at the AHL score sheet, there's a whole bunch of missing spots there. It's a shame, it's frustrating for them, but like I said, when they're healthy, that's when that surge is going to start there. That's the caveat.
Fair point. Well, we are going to move again right on ahead after some interest. I wish we could show our private chat here on StreamYard to you all, because right now we're all talking about Pizza Pockets, Tim Hortons, the fact that Canada doesn't have Hot Pockets. And then I started just kind of typing out the Bagel Bites jingles. So life gets
better than having them hear that Burger King jingle again, I tell you.
Oh, I'm so sick of that commercial. Oh my word. It needs to be like the Dallas Cowboys and just die off, please. Just leave us alone. We're done. Over it.
Yeah. Well, what's not done is the AHL season. We are thick in the race for the Holy Grail. And we're going to go ahead and take a look at those standings now.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll kick it off with the Atlantic again. I've already kind of beaten this one a couple of times already over this show, but with the Atlantic, it's just a dog pile. I mean, there's no other nice way to put it. I mean, Hershey's in the driver's seat still, 57 points. The big comeback win on Saturday over Belleville helped them stay ahead of Providence, who lost in overtime. By the way, that Providence-Hartford series has been all as advertised. Each team has a win in regulation and a win in overtime. So it's been a one that, low-key I'd like to see again in the playoffs get revisited potentially. But, Providence stays at 54, 3 points down, instead of potentially 1 point in that case. But, you know, from there down, Charlotte's 10 points down from them at 44. But you go to the bottom of the division, Bridgeport's at the bottom at just 41. So, I mean, you know, that's one head-to-head matchup, two head-to-head matchups from, you know, you could take the team on the bottom and put them up at the top, honestly. So it's so close to me that, you know, no one's really been able to kind of get out ahead of this here. I mean, Lehigh Valley, there's a few teams like them that have strung a couple of wins in a row, but it's really just to kind of get them into the middle of the pack rather than the bottom. So it's great parity at the very least. And, you know, again, when that playoffs play-in series comes around, there will absolutely be some teams in 7th and 8th that will feel disappointed to not make it possibly too.
I mean, even saying it, like, Corey, like, for the hot for the Atlantic, how about the fact that the entire division is so good that it's like anyone can kind of like take third to wherever they get in the playoffs? I mean, talk about, like, I don't think there's any other division as stacked as the Atlantic at this point.
I agree. And the nice part about it is that, you know, that play-in series will really mean something for whoever gets it, because it's no longer going to be, you know, like last year where it was, you know, I think it was Springfield and Charlotte, if I'm not mistaken. I think Charlotte was actually finished at the top there due to the points percentage. But, you know, those teams face drastically weakened competition there. I would love to see a team, you know, win a 2-1 series in overtime and ride that momentum and really take one of these top teams and give them a shocker type of thing. Really have that benefit of playing some games in there as a result. So, like you said, I think it's exactly where it needs to be for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So for the North, I mean, I talked about it earlier, the Marlies are 9-1 in their last 10. It's just, well, they're also on an 8-game point streak. So if that really says anything, it just keeps showing you that the Marlies are, like I said, the royalty of the North Division. Syracuse is, they are trying to close the gap on them as well. Mostly on Utica, because Syracuse is 5-0-1 in their current run, only being 4 points behind the Comets. So there's a little bit of a, you could see that 2-3 is kind of like, you know, might have a little bit of a closer fight than what some people think. I said Laval, I know, is my hot take of them kind of maybe finishing third. They are kind of slowly catching the Rochester Americans, who are in fourth, as the Amherst are 0-3-1 in their last current run, while Laval is 3-0-1. So, like I said, there's a lot of teams kind of in the North Division, the top half, kind of catching each other. So we could see a little bit more of a tighter race between those teams. Like I said, third to fifth is about like 4 points difference. So we could see a little bit of a closer gap. And yes, I do have to, Deanna did say Belleville is now officially the team in last place in the North. So I did make sure to preference this, that Belleville is last. They are 0-4-0-1 in their current run, and they are 3-5-1-1 in their last 10. So Belleville has having kind of an issue as of late to even try to stay with, you know, out of the actual cellar in the basement, tucked behind the corner of the stairs in the North. The Monsters are officially 6 in the North now after their split this weekend with Charlotte. So kind of an interesting dynamic of a little bit closer battles, but also teams kind of readjusting their places in a division with some pretty abysmal runs right now.
Over in the Central, Texas has points in 9 of their last 10 games, and that kind of helps anchor them up in that top spot in the division. They sit about 5 points ahead of the Milwaukee Admirals. They're in second. Manitoba actually has leapfrogged the hapless Ice Hogs, who are in the midst of a 4-game losing streak, as I kind of mentioned before. And the Iowa Wild, they're closing in. They're just 1 point behind with a nice little 6-0-1 streak there for them. And, you know, Grand Rapids and Chicago are at the bottom again.
That was the saddest little ending to a segment I think I've ever heard. No, that voice was pathetic.
In the season.
Hey, Andrew, do we need to talk about it? How does it make you feel? How does it make you feel, bud?
I don't want to talk about it.
He used up all his airtime last year when he talked about how good Chicago was. You'll never believe how good the Wolves are.
Yeah, about that.
But on a positive note, Andrew does get to go to Chicago, from what I'm understanding, with a nice little payoff at the end there.
Yeah, I managed to secure myself a nice little chat on Sunday with how do I put this lightly? Just, you know, goaltending prospect phenom Pyotr Kochetkov, and I'm pretty excited about it. I know he's been working on his English, but just in case, I do have a bilingual journalist who will be translating, and if necessary, I'm very excited. I've spoken a lot about his play on the ice. He's fiery. He's got a swagger. He's got just as much personality as you could possibly ask for. He's been loved by this fan base since day one, and I hope to just capture a little bit of it for our readers to enjoy. So keep an eye out for that piece. You're not going to want to miss it.
Something that's been in plain English is just how good the Coachella Valley Firebirds have been. Little changes this week, and the Firebirds still continue at the top. They haven't lost a game in regulation in 13 games now. 58 points for them. Calgary still holding their own with wins in 7 of their last 10. And here's where things have changed, though. Colorado getting back into form, just taking that third place spot from Abbotsford, who are now in fourth. And going down the list, Ontario just barely on the right side of that cliff that we talk about. And they have 6 points ahead of Tucson right now, who are just on the bottom end of that cliff. So going down the list, it's Tucson, Henderson, Bakersfield, and San Diego. San Diego now has lost 5 straight games. And if you're keeping score at home, they are now 36 points behind first place. So they're just about there. They just need to win about 18 straight games before they can regain that first place spot.
Something else that has finished taking form here are our picks for the game of the week. Terrible transition, but I wasn't given a whole heck of a lot to work with after Zach had that absolute mic drop of a transition. I might be losing my job here soon, guys.
Well, yeah, I guess I'll start it off again with the game of the week here. I got an easy one here. Bridgeport, Hershey, Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, I know there's another game in Pennsylvania that's going on about the same time that people are looking forward to. I'm a Philly guy, so I'm well aware that I'm going to be missing the Eagles game for this one, but it's the teddy bear toss. You don't need any more setup for it. They're saving the best for last in the AHL's teddy bear toss with the Bears, looking to break the record of over 52,000 teddy bears. I got a big old feature article coming out about that this week. So stay tuned for that. We'll go over all the scores of the teddy bear goal for about the last decade or so within that piece here that it was held. But, you know, at the end of the day, the points are still important in this game, right? We have Bridgeport that's looking to, you know, get out of that car wreck we were talking about earlier with, you know, with their vehicle, their wheels still intact and rolling. You know, meanwhile, Hershey, they need the points there because, you know, it seems like anytime they don't get points, Providence slowly, you know, kind of gains on them in some space there. So it's a lot to look forward to. I know I have a big teddy bear that's about 5 feet tall that I'm bringing into the game to try to heave over the glass at some point. So I just hope I don't make a complete fool of myself over there. So there's lots to be excited about. I'm really excited about it. And, you know, I'll do my best to try to get you guys a good angle of the video for it.
I mean, Corey, that's just an easy toss-up of a pick for, you know, that game. I mean, it's one of the best nights to have. It's fantastic. I kind of miss it for Charlotte, but I'm excited to go to the Tabor toss. It's always a great night. It's always, you know, it's fun. So, fantastic. I mean, you kind of have to go with that one. It's too easy.
I only get to go once a year with it, too. So, I mean, you know, I love getting to, you know, pump the tires a little bit of, you know, the Bears in a little bit, but it's one that's it's personal to me because, you know, I've watched this for years, like get slowly bigger and slowly bigger, and then they eclipsed Calgary, and like that just felt like for years that was never going to happen, and now to not only see them top it but increase that number by like almost 20,000 teddy bears, it's insane. I'm so excited.
Yeah, no, definitely for sure. So mine is actually kind of interesting. This is more of a division against division matchup. I got the Providence Bruins at Utica for the Comets. Both teams are second place in their divisions, looking to pick up points on their division leaders. The thing that's really interesting is the fact that it's the goal fours and the goals against for these teams makes it really interesting because Utica has 120 goals for while Providence has 117. But the thing that even makes it more interesting is the fact that the giving up part of the goal totals as well. Utica's given up 114, so they get about a six-goal differential, while Providence is only given up 105, which is a goal differential of 12 respectively. So it's really going to be a case of what team and what goalies are going to be able to like keep the other one at bay. So I think that's going to be a really fun game where either you're going to have a lot of scoring or it's going to be a really tight, low-scoring battle. But, I mean, you got two power weights going up against each other in their respective divisions trying to catch for the division lead. This is one where I definitely won't want to miss the Bruins against the Comets.
For me, I am also going with a interdivisional matchup. I got what would be tonight's game with Coachella Valley going into Iowa to take on the Wild. And this is going to be a bit of a statement series as you can get if you're Iowa. You're hosting the hottest team in the AHL that's looked unbeatable for a month. Last year, Andrew Podorolski absolutely haunted Iowa, and I want to see if this new-look Wild team as of late, can they exact a bit of revenge and really kind of show up the AHL world as, you know, not just a hot team, but a team that's really here to play and to compete in the Central.
You know what? Pacific Division, you got to be watching Colorado and Texas. These are two heavyweights that are going at it. Colorado is on a good side of a fierce division, and this is going to be a true test of playoff hockey. You want to win the Calder Cup, this is the team to beat. You'll have to play these guys in the third round if you want to make it to the finals because, you know, looking at the Central Division, I mean, they're a bit of a shoe-in to kind of do it. Who knows? But this is a type of team that you're going to have to play. So Colorado, I would get used to this now, and this would be the series to watch to see who comes out on top. Because we do so much talking about the Pacific Division, this is a chance for the Central to shine.
But yeah, we do have some free action for you guys to take in. We have the AHL Free Game of the Week features the matchup between the Laval Rocket and the Cleveland Monsters. The two teams that we've talked about a little bit here, good amount actually, this matchup has, you know, the potential in the North Division to get the Monsters back on the board and get them within reach of the Rocket, who are just 3 points ahead of them. So there's some great head-to-head points on the board here. If you're a Monsters fan, you really want to see them win this game in order to, you know, really get back into this race a bit here and make it interesting going down the stretch. I mean, more teams make the playoffs. Nobody's ever truly out of it. So that's a great game to take in for free, the best kind of game to take in. And that game starts on Saturday night at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 6 Central.
Also, we do have live action on the Field Pass Hockey app this weekend. Do you like cross-divisional play, like two dead-even teams battling it out in Rochester? Come on down to the Field Pass Hockey app, and we got you there, where the Checkers will take on the Amerks at a hearty 7:05 on Friday. Then, if you're kind of immune to the 05 thing, you know, I get it, it's okay. Do it all again the next night at 05. You know, I didn't make this up. It's 6:05, I'm sorry. But these two cold-hearted teams will go against each other again on Saturday for that rematch, and you can find that on the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store.
Now, to close out the show, Zach, I think, was alluding to it already with the cold. And, you know, I'm just going to say, you already came on down, downloaded our app. Let's come on down into the bonus round. Zach, is it getting a little cold in here? It sounds like it in our script.
It certainly is, and it's a little chilly. And I kind of trolled you guys a little bit and said that it would be about the Great White North, which is the coldest place on Earth. But you know what? I'm keeping it outside for this one. The AHL outdoor game is coming up in just about a month and a bit. So, yeah. That's coming up. So I will have a series of three questions to ask you, and whoever comes out with the most answers wins. My first question, how many outdoor games have there been in AHL history? And we're talking about regular season.
I'm going to go with 10.
I'm going to go with 8.
I was going to say 12.
Oh, man. I guess I'll take the under on that one at 9.
Dean is right on the money. It's 10.
Ooh. Oh,
wow.
Okay. Nice.
Pretty good. This is going to be a little bit of a tough one, but I think someone might know the answer to this. What was the most attended AHL outdoor game? And it was by a complete landslide. If you can name either one of the teams that played or the venue or the year or anything along those lines, I'll take it.
Oh, I got a good guess for this one. Citizens Bank Park, Philadelphia, and Hershey. And the only reason I'm guessing that is because to get into that game, as I remember, to get into the outdoor classic for that game, you got a package of tickets, right? So you got tickets for the alumni game, Hershey versus, I guess it was the Adirondack Phantoms at the time, if I'm not mistaken, as well as the alumni game, the actual game, and the Hershey Phantoms game. That's my guess.
How am I supposed to compete with that?
I just want to say I think Corey got the answer right, so I'm just not even going to share a pick because, yeah, it sounds right to me.
Yeah, that was completely right. I got nothing else to say.
Corey's with a massive mic drop is like, sorry, cool.
Boom! We are doing this.
It's like, guess what? None of you are going to guess because I got the answer. Bam! There we go.
Well, it's funny because like I have a house edge on this one because there's 10 outdoor games and Hershey's had 3 of them that they've been involved in. So like I already know that the Citizens Bank Park seats way more than Hershey Park Stadium ever could or ever has for either of the two games. And I've frozen my butt off at 2 of those 3. So, you know.
Jeez. So, Hershey is the Chicago Blackhawks, Pittsburgh Penguins, and Boston Bruins of the AHL.
Exactly. And that's why, like, you guys are over there being like, oh, it's going to be so exciting to go to our outdoor game. I'm like, listen, I'm ready to be inside. I'm an old man now. I can't take the cold like this, like I used to.
So, that's why you're not coming on our little outing. Okay. Okay.
Well, that's because there's a Bears game the same day, and I am, if anything, I am loyal.
I give you that 100%.
I mean, at least this outdoor game for the Monsters is probably the most exciting thing to happen in Brown Stadium since ever. So, I mean,
I'm not even going to argue about that. I'm not even going to go into it, but yes, absolutely. I'm also from
Northeast Ohio, believe me, I'm allowed to make that type of joke as a former Browns fan. So
that's
why
I'm not upset about it.
See, Deanna, you get it. You get it.
I do. Us Ohioans, current and former, have to stick together.
That's just something.
Ended up with Adirondack taking that 4-3 in overtime. If you're curious, 45,653 people attended. Wow. That. So it was very awesome. Well attended. My last and final question. Who was the last team or teams scheduled to host the outdoor game?
I know Utica was one of them. I don't know the other one, but I know Utica was.
Who would I'm going to say Rochester, just because I always say Rochester when it comes to like historic venue type deal things.
I'm going with Utica and Providence just because of the fact that it would be an interesting matchup, but I have no idea.
I go with Syracuse just because the proximity there breeds hatred, in my opinion.
That would make sense, wouldn't it?
Corey, you came along by the slimmest of margins. Actually, you were both kind of right. Syracuse is the host of it, or was the host of it, which was supposed to happen in 2021. It was Syracuse versus Utica.
Oh.
It was supposed to be.
So you guys were both kind of right.
Yeah, Corey, it was supposed to be.
Right?
If I'm not mistaken, can I grab a bonus point for saying if I'm not mistaken, I believe it was supposed to be on my birthday in 2021, which is February 13th.
I think that's bonus points. I don't have that, but I'll take it. Wow.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I believe because I was kind of eyeing tickets for that.
That's a random stat, and you know what? We'll take it. They actually announced that in like February, March 2020. And I was like, yeah. Right? It was like right before the year time.
A nice way to say, yeah.
I was about to say, Dina, if you want to have this one, you can. But I was about to say, if you want to split the difference, we could come out with some fun facts about the 2016 Calder Cup playoffs, since that was the year our two beats faced off.
Let's do a double bonus round. A duo bonus round next week, Corey.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yes. Okay, I will rescind that point because I don't know if that's true or not. And Corey and I will gladly share this. We'll ride off into the sunset, co-winners, and we'll give you guys some fun trivia from the 2016 Calder Cup Finals against the Lake Erie Monsters and the Hershey Bears. And guys, that's going to do it for the Holy Grail this week. If you'd like to see or hear more of us, please subscribe to us on YouTube or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And I just want to take a quick second to thank everyone who has listened to our show across the world. We got some amazing news this week, and especially our fans in Great Britain, the Czech Republic, of course, here in the US and in Canada. Guys, the Holy Grail is ranking on the top hockey podcast charts in all those countries. Our fans in Great Britain, you have gotten us up to 16th on your country's hockey chart. The Czech Republic, how do you do? We are 24th. The U.S., last time I checked, we're 96th, which, guys, this is exciting with all of these U.S.-based, especially NHL podcasts that we're getting up there with them. In Canada, 101st. So once again, thank you for subscribing, listening, downloading, leaving all the love. Thank you so much. And of course, you can also follow us on Twitter at The Holy Grail. You know how it goes, GRAHL. But if you want some more trending hockey podcasts in your life, we got more for you here at Field Pass Hockey with Inside the SPHL with James Hayes. ECHL, more your speed? Then join Jet Matthew Harding and Jason Miles as they break down the ECHL's Wichita Thunder, while they also chat with some of the team's legendary players. That's the Rolling Thunder podcast, airing bi-weekly here at Field Pass Hockey. And then, of course, we have Syracuse Speaks with Alexandra Ackerman. Of course, all about the Syracuse crunch. And she really focuses on maintaining a balanced perspective in the ever-shifting world of minor league hockey. On behalf of all of us here at the Holy Grail, Zach with a K, Zach with an H, Andrew and Corey, we hope that you have an amazing week, and we will see you next Thursday. Bye.
This has been the Holy Grail Podcast. Have a question or a topic suggestion? Hit us up on Twitter or drop us an email. For the latest news across the American Hockey League and the rest of minor league hockey, download the Field Pass Hockey app, now available in the Apple and Android app stores.